Hey, you. Yes, you guessed 10,542. Change your username. And while you're in a More Like Radio live page listening to fine quality programming, notice the banner ad just slightly above the chat room? It's a link to something you want in Amazon. Click it. It's probably reminding you to order something you need from Amazon.com. Don't leave MLR and type the URL like a sucker. Just click the link and it'll open in a new window. This way you can buy your shit and continue listening to the show. Now, change your username. It's right there on the right, stupid.
This is John Benjamin, and you're listening to the Nerd Hour.
Yes, so what's going on? We are the Nerd Hour. Hopefully a technical difficulty free edition, thanks to super producer Scrambler.
Doubtful.
Easy there,
Carmen. Producer, wait till I start shaking that contract.
What contract?
He loves whenever I'm on a different show. He likes to say that he waves the contract. He likes to in WhatsApp.
Yeah, but you see, his contract is a beer napkin, so I wouldn't worry.
That's true. Can we just talk about Facebook ruining WhatsApp already?
Why would happen?
Oh, we couldn't post any audio today, or files, or pictures, or anything.
Only really? Because I seem to get nothing but those things from you people today.
Well, yeah, there was a dam, and it was holding back a bunch of pent-up image posting, and then all of a sudden the floodgates broke, and everybody had to get it out of their system.
Oh, boy.
But for 8 hours, 8 hours, there was nothing going through.
Well, who knows? Maybe if now that Facebook has WhatsApp, no one will have to pay a dollar every year.
What was that, C-Pain?
I said, how is this fucking echoing?
I don't know. It's you.
Fuck this, I'm hanging up.
All right, so we got a pretty big episode. My interview with Anthony Spey of Zenoscope.
Fucking better?
Much better.
Was it me?
Who knows? Sometimes you got to hang up and call back on Skype.
Because I called back and I still hear a fucking echo.
Yeah, I hear you echo too.
Who's echoing?
Cornax?
Oh, Cornax.
I don't see it can be echoing.
Well, we can see it, actually. So anyway, regardless, UFC is over, so we're going to start getting our audience back. Fucking A. The night that that we have something big, pretty big going on, there's a fucking UFC card.
Well, there's a UFC 3.
There's.
All right. Is it still doing it on your guys' side?
Yeah, I can hear you kind of cutting a bit. But whatevsies.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm going to call back. I'm actually having an asthma attack right now.
All right. So anyway, there's a UFC event tonight, the Ronda Rousey match. And, I missed it because I was prepping for this show because I'm a dedicated show host.
Well, there's a UFC. I'm not hearing any echo now, so it is Cornax.
It is Mr. Cornax. But again, though, I do want to announce that there is a new show partner. Not officially a sponsor. I mean, I'm starting out with a partnership at first. And that is Zenoscope Entertainment, the publishers of Grim Fairy Tales and all the offshoots for that. And they also do some licensed comics. So it's going to be exciting. It's definitely a comic, like the Grim Fairy Tales series that I like to get issues of, because the stories are fantastic. I mean, early on, it started as like modern retellings of fairy tales.
Is that the Grimm that's on TV?
No. This is a comic book. It's very different. No,
but it's the one that's on TV. Is that a response to the comic book, or are they totally separate?
Totally separate.
Okay.
And they're really good, but also the covers are obviously more for guys because the covers are just basically hot chicks. That's the probably the best you can say, and now apparently I'm overmodulated.
It's just you? Oh, we got Red Sox helping us out in chat.
Yes. So, anyway, even though my levels are low now, guys, I mean, seriously. Okay, whatever. So, you know, and they have, like, really cool, which we talk about in the interview, like, when they do exclusives for conventions, you know how some comic companies will make a cover, and it's just like, oh, look, a different color of the same cover that you pretty much bought already. And that's, like, their incentive?
Right, they do the multiple, the multiple covers per issue type of thing.
Yeah, well, I'll give an example. The first two Grim Fairy Tales issues I ever bought were actually New York Comic Con exclusives in 2010. And they caught my eye because I'm a big football fan, and I'll buy whatever football related. And it was, like, two different covers of the characters. One character wearing, like, a Giants-themed jersey, the other one wearing a Jets-themed jersey. So I was like, fuck it, that's kind of cool. I'm going to pick it up. And then I picked up a couple issues to read because I'm, like, one of those collectors who I'll get some reader copies of issues and then get, like, you know, the key stuff I'll bag and board and keep safe somewhere. I have a box with, like, key issues or key covers. And, you know, I bought them, and then I read the comics, and I pretty much caught myself up to a certain point, and it's a completely interesting comic. Fantastic. And it's very underrated, I'll say.
Right now I'm imagining you being, like, Jason Lee in Mallrats.
With
your bagged and board comics.
I will not argue that. That's a pretty good comparison. I'll take it. Fuck it. So, but we're, you know, we'll get back to that later when I get to the break and do the interview. The lead story, which there are a few that we could have said, but they've announced pretty much the new cast for Fantastic Four, the reboot they're doing, because let's face it, the Silver Surfer ones suck pretty badly.
But yeah, I like the first Fantastic Four. But the Silver Surfer, not as good.
It was the first one. I mean, it had a decent cast, but it could have been better.
It was at a time when there wasn't quite as many comic movies either. It was just that and X-Men, maybe Spider-Man, I think, at the time. So it didn't have a lot of competition. So 10 years ago, I thought it was all right.
The best things about those Fantastic Four movies were Jessica Alba in the cat suit, Chris Evans basically auditioning for Captain America, and Michael Chiklis.
Chris Evans, that was his first movie with Marvel.
Yep.
And Captain America, his third.
Yes, it was, and now he's Captain America. Like, and Captain America is so much better than the Fantastic Four movies. I'm pretty sure he's glad he got that do-over.
Yeah. Did you like what was the one? There are a bunch of mercenaries that he was in with Zoe Saldana and Idris Elba.
I
love that movie, and I just can't think of it right now. Give me 2 seconds while you...
I kind of know what you're talking about, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But then again, there's a lot of movies I've seen. There's a lot of movies I haven't seen. But anyway, there's a new Fantastic Four cast because they're rebooting it. That's what Fox has been doing and pretty much everyone's been doing. So we're going to start off with Mr. Fantastic. He was Ian Guffard in the original, movies made by, I believe it was 20th Century Fox. And now they've hired Miles Teller to play Mr. Fantastic. Miles Teller, who is all of 27 years old, I want to point out. So that's going to be a little weird. But, he was in the movie Whiplash, which is coming out this year. He's going to be in Divergent. He was in 21 and Over and Project X. So that's kind of where they got him from. He's also in an episode of The Unusuals, but, you know, he's not much. He's a little young for the role, but it seems like with the people they've picked, they are kind of skewing younger.
Sure.
Next one, The Invisible Woman. So far the biggest name in the cast, Kate Mara, is playing Sue Storm, and she's a really good actress.
She is, and she's in House of Cards, which everybody knows her from because that show is blowing up. But she's just a good actress. She's not the best actress in the family, as we were discussing before the show, but she is very attractive, and that's what it takes to be Sue Storm.
Pretty, and listen, she's a better actress than Jessica Alba.
Oh, yeah.
And this is her second go-around in Marvel movies. She was the U.S. Marshal in Iron Man 2 that subpoenas Tony Stark.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
That was her. On the other hand, I'm not a racist and don't... I, on the other hand, am not a racist and don't mind. I, on the other hand, am not a racist and don't mind. I, you know, I am not a racist, I want to point out. And, yeah, so I guess we... And by the way, for people for podcasts, missed a whole chunk of it, so I'm just going to repeat this. But the most controversial of the castings, clearly going to be Michael B. Jordan as the invisible, as Johnny Storm. Because when you cast someone who was white in the comics with a black actor, they just kind of go apeshit on the internets and all that. Like, they really just lose their shit. It's kind of hilarious. They did the same thing when Idris Elba was hired, and he did a pretty good job. I don't think he did a bad job at all. It, you know, so the world wasn't, the sky wasn't falling, the world wasn't ending. They could fucking relax.
Is this in, you mean for Thor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael B. Jordan.
He did a great job on that, yeah. Too.
Michael B. Jordan, who you guys might recognize from The Wire, he was Wallace. No one?
No, yeah. Well, I mean, it's just you and me. But, yeah.
He wasn't in the series past friggin' the first one, first season. But still, you know, I mean, whatevsies. And playing Ben Grimm is Billy Elliot himself, Jamie Bell. That's right. He played Billy Elliot. From Billy Elliot to the Thing, which I think is cool. He also plays... he played Griffin O'Connor in Jumper, for those who remember that movie.
I liked that movie, by the way.
It was all right, I think.
I didn't say it was a masterpiece. I just said I enjoyed it.
he's also recently been in Nymphomaniac with a, you know, like the Lars von Trier movie about a nymphomaniac, pretty much. So it's very odd casting, I think. But then again... As long as they're good, doesn't matter. But they definitely went young with the casting.
Did they... I'm jumping on IMDb real quick. Did they announce who is going to be villains or anything? Or it's just those four right now?
Just those four right now. They haven't really announced anyone else in the cast yet. I think they're like they're just starting with the main cast, and then eventually they will tell us who the other cast is.
Yeah. And the director is Josh Trank, who is very young.
Yeah, he did, again, he did Chronicle, which is probably where he got Michael B. Jordan. Like, he decided to use him by working with him on that movie.
Yeah, he's young. He's 28 years old. Well, I guess he just turned 29 3 days ago, according to this. But, yeah, that's pretty young for, you know... It's only a second movie.
Only. A little bit. Just a smidge. Next thing I want to talk about is the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. Which just looks fantastic.
Yeah, I'm excited for the year of Chris Pratt to continue.
Yeah, it has been quite the year for him. He's been in a lot of like high-profile movies, and they're continuing. It's continuing. Like, he's getting more. And I think Guardians of the Galaxy is going to open up just the smarmy roles that Nathan Fillion used to get. Scrambler.
I'm here. I keep forgetting that Cornax isn't here and that I need to engage you the whole time.
Yes.
I apologize.
Come on, Cornax. We do a podcast together.
That's true.
You should know me by now. I can drop in at any point. Me stopping talking is like the RKO. It can happen at any time. But, and, like, it's the one thing I'll see on screen that I don't mind seeing Dave Bautista in. Zoe Saldana's in it, and she's always really good. And
yeah, I really like her. She plays a good badass chick.
Yeah, and I love the tone of the commercial. Like, you can tell it to not take it too seriously. And then you've got these just four badass characters, and then a raccoon and Chris Pratt.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Guardians of the Galaxy. What's Star Fox's deal?
Star Fox, he's a raccoon.
Well, I know, but I figured I'd throw in Star Fox because it's the only...
His name is Rocket Raccoon, and he's, trust me, it's going to be fantastic.
Is it? Okay.
And Bradley Cooper is voicing him.
Oh, all right. Man, he is in everything.
Yeah, he pretty much is. You know, Samuel Jackson's in everything.
Well, I mean, yeah.
And then Vin Diesel is actually voicing Groot, the walking tree.
Okay, well, that makes sense. He actually has a very tree-esque voice, doesn't he?
You're saying he's wooden, basically.
Yes.
And I want to point this out because we've talked about this movie so much in the Nerd Hour. So it was awesome to see a trailer finally happen. And Red Sox in chat, what Red Scrambler saying is he finds you boring.
That's not true.
Yeah, I think Red Sox is trying to be a shit stirrer again.
Which everyone at More Like Radio is a shit stirrer or takes the role of shit stirrer on occasion. So
don't worry, Cornax. This isn't makeup talk. You won't get banned. See what I did there?
I did. I saw that. I liked that.
And then the supporting cast too. I mean, Lee Pace is in there as one of the villains. Also, another villain is played by Michael Rooker.
And he's going to be, you know what, I was looking at the cons, because I remember I told you that I wanted to go to a con or two this year.
Yeah.
There's one coming through Chicago, and it's got a ton of Walking Dead people in it. Michael Rooker's going to be there. Carl's going to be there, Herschel, Michonne, and I think there's one other person. But I kind of want to go... And I want to have like some chocolate covered pretzels and make him do the stink palm pose with me.
Yes. let's see who else we got here. Karen Gillian from Doctor Who is Nebula, another villain, and another villain is Digimon Hansu as Kroth. So that's gonna be cool. And then one of the Nova Corps characters, Roman Day, is played by John C. Reilly. And then the leader of the Nova Corps is played by Glenn Close.
Yeah, she's great.
She really is. And then, what was it? Benicio del Toro has a scene in there as the collector. So again, fantastic cast.
Yeah, they went in on this, and I don't think anybody. I mean, like people knew who Fantastic Four and the Avengers were that didn't know anything about comics. I think the Guardian of the Galaxy is one of those ones where if you don't know comics, you don't even know that it exists, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Red Sox in chat, Dark Fox was on the red ones. Also, one thing people won't really notice, the guy, I don't know if you saw the trailer yet to the Guardians of the Galaxy.
I haven't.
You haven't? There's a scene where John C. Reilly's character of the Nova Corps is talking about the people in the Guardians of the Galaxy and giving like what they do or what they're known for. And there's another Nova Corps member talking to him. And the guy playing that Nova Corps character is Peter Serafinowicz, who you might recognize as Pete from Shaun of the Dead.
Yep. So he's doing these are the characters for, like, the explain it because people obviously won't know about it type of role in the movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's, the scene ends where it's like, oh, they call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy, and his characters are more like a-holes. They sound like a-holes. Which I'm sure is they sound like assholes in the film.
Okay. Let's see here.
I think it's going to be a fantastic movie. And Marvel's been doing it well with the movies. DC, they finally got a successful box office movie with Superman, but before it was just all Batman and then nothing else would do well.
Well, DC still has a lot of catching up to do, so...
They do, but still.
I mean, they've never really tried to go with much besides Superman, so.
Yes. And they're actually Superman,
Batman. I apologize.
They're doing a movie called Terminator Genesis. I think it's supposed to be like a reboot or a reimagining, whatever. And they pretty much announced the main cast for the most part. Emilia Clarke is playing Sarah Connor. Jay Courtney is playing Kyle Reese. Jason Clarke as John Connor and Arnold Schwarzenegger will be reprising his role as the Terminator.
I like all those, by the way.
They're, you know, like, it's weird. They used to just be like, hey, let's just pick any shitty actor who looks like they can be in an action movie. And that's our cast. Whereas now, freaking, holy crap, they're actually getting good actors in these movies now.
Yeah, well, I mean, Emilia Clarke is, she's, I don't know how they even get her to do anything. They must have paid her a crazy amount of money.
They will, again, though, that's what happens. You get, like, into the paycheck phase.
Yeah. I like Jason Clarke. He's great. He was in Zero Dark Thirty, did a good job. I like Jai Courtney. And the most recent thing I've seen him in is A Good Day to Die Hard, because it's been on TV a lot lately. But he does good in the, he's on Spartacus. He does good in that action role. And then who did you say was Arnold Schwarzenegger coming back for the fifth time?
Actually, for the role of Kyle Reese, the ones who they talked to initially were Garrett Hedlund, Tom Hardy, Taylor Kitsch, and Nicholas Holt. And then they settled on Jai Courtney.
It could have been. Well, I don't know if people would have really.
Come on, man. Come on.
Hardy and that.
Tom Hardy. He can at this point, he can do no wrong.
Have you ever seen Layer Cake?
No, I haven't seen that, but I saw Rock and Rolla.
Yeah, okay. So he plays kind of the same type of character. He's like the suave, obviously not gay, like he was in Rock and Rolla, but the kind of the suave, like understated English, you know, drug dealer, gangster, criminal type element. And he does really good in those too.
Yeah, but he's also been killing it with a lot of his recent roles, like Warrior.
Warrior was great.
Even though people give the Bane voice shit, he did a really good job as Bane.
Yeah, and I watched Batman and Robin, and that version of Bane, not so good.
Well, yeah, pretty much they took a highly intelligent character and turned him into just a freaking meathead.
Right, yeah, who... Uma Thurman just demanded around while he had neon veins.
Yeah, that would be like taking the Joker and turning him into a mime. It's pretty much what they did to Bane. Because a lot of people don't really get the fact that Bane was very tactical and very, very intelligent. And that's what they did with The Dark Knight Rises, which is why I like the movie so much with how they portrayed that character. Despite the voice they gave him. Again, I will point out, and I will say, Tom Hardy has been in quite a few franchises that are just like loved by nerd culture. He was in a Star Trek movie, Star Trek Nemesis. He was in a Batman movie, and now he's going to be in a Mad Max movie.
Oh, they're redoing Mad Max. I forgot.
Plus, he was in Inception.
Yeah, and it's when you see him in he is one of those guys where he can be a small stature guy when he doesn't have all the bulk on him, like in Inception or like Rock and Rolla. He's not a big guy, but man, does he put on some bulk in Warrior and as Bane.
Yeah, he's pretty good at gaining and then dropping the muscle. He's very good.
And he's covered in tattoos, which they did a great job of getting rid of for Bane.
Well, were they really his tattoos, or were they just there for other movies and they took them off?
No, he's a tat guy.
He was also really good as Bronson, Charles Bronson, the inmate.
I didn't see that.
Oh, dude. It's one of those, it was good because of the acting in the main role.
Movies. Okay. Like, yeah, no, I haven't. I haven't seen that. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, you know how like some movies are just not as good if like it's a different actor than casting the role. But
It's just fantastic. I thought Bronson was a very underrated movie. And another story we're going to get to. I don't know if you watched The Walking Dead.
I do. I'm a week behind.
You're a week behind? Well, prepare to get spoiled.
That's okay. I watched the first episode of the second half of the season this morning, and I wasn't really... I wasn't that impressed by it, so...
You see, I'm different as far as that, because I liked the first episode of this half of the season because of the fact that they had the one moment from the comics that was really awesome. Carl's "I don't need you" speech, and then subsequent almost getting killed and realizing he does need his dad still.
Oh, okay. Do you like the... Because I think I liked it when they did it with the governor, but do you like the All Alone episodes?
What do you mean All Alone episodes? Like,
well, like this one, I mean, besides Michonne, but it was pretty much... I mean, it was only three characters in this whole episode. But, like, when the governor came back, he was the only guy in the episode that we had known besides, you know, the two girls, the family that he met up with. But he was, you know, they shut out all the characters and just have, like, the one person. Do you like when they do that in a show that has such a deep cast?
I think that's a good thing because, you know, once in a while you do need someone to get their own All Alone episode. Because that gives you ample time to flesh that character out, whereas in a regular episode, there's not enough screen time to give everybody the proper backstory and fleshing out that they require. So once every while, an episode like that is very much needed.
Okay. All right.
But what I liked about this episode, it obviously showed what happened to everybody. It was a pretty big episode. I mean, I feel bad because I'm about to spoil some stuff for you. But
no, I don't feel bad.
You find out Judith is actually alive.
Okay. I didn't think they would kill her, but...
well, they did in the comic, so...
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't read the graphic novel, so...
Carol returns. You pretty much see where Glenn is. He pretty much was knocked out by one of the blasts of the prison. And he was on, like, that bridge when the tank shot at it at the mid-season finale.
Okay, yeah, where they had the pallets up there, like their little shooting
area,
okay.
So he was there, like knocked out after that happened. They're actually, in the comic, there's two little boys who, after the prison, they also escape. They're twins. The one becomes a psychopath, pretty much, and kills the other one. And Carl ends up killing the one that kills killed his own brother. As just to be like he's not safe. What if he kills someone else? Type deal.
Is that going to be the two girls, the sisters?
That's what I was going to say because the one sister, they're kind of showing that she's starting to turn into a little psychopath. Like she really is. But at the very end of the episode, they introduce three new characters, and I'm excited because one of the characters is an awesome character, like one of my favorite characters of the comic series, Abraham Ford. He's played by Michael Kudlitz, and he's just going to be awesome.
Okay. So I will look out. I'm going to watch. I'll probably watch it tonight or tomorrow. So
I think Michael Kudlitz is from Homeland. I'm not sure, though. Someone will have to tell me about that and tell me whether he is or not. But
I'm looking him up right now, so yeah. I will.
But he looks just like the comic book version of Abraham, like almost to a T. And actually, all three of the characters, new characters, do. There's a character, Rosita, who's like a Spanish chick. Well, she and the actress they pick looks a lot like the comic version. And Eugene is another character, and the guy they picked, not as chubby as he is in the comic, but still looks a lot like him.
Yeah, Michael Kudlitz wasn't on Homeland. He's on Southland.
Southland is what I was thinking of.
The LA cop show. He plays a cop. I think he's a sergeant, but he has a Vicodin problem.
Well, and now he's going to have a zombie problem. So
see, okay,
yeah. But like, and I like that. I like the fact that they're going more in line with the comics. I hope they keep doing it. I kind of hope they, I don't know what's going to happen because obviously they can only stay as true, like a certain amount true to the comics. Because there's so many things different now at this point than they were in the comics at this point. Like, in the comic, Andrea is still alive. But she's obviously 12 years younger, and at this point now, her and Rick are dating. Well, whatever you would consider dating in the zombie apocalypse, pretty much. Tyrese was killed at the prison. Carol was killed before the prison war. Basically, the way Herschel died in the TV show is how Tyrese dies in the comic.
Okay.
What else? Obviously, like I said, Judith died in the comic. Lori dies at the same time Judith dies because Lori's escaping with Judith, and one of the governor's people shoots Lori.
Okay, so in the comic, Lori gives birth and doesn't turn into a zombie.
Yeah, she gives birth and actually lives. Because Herschel's actually the one who is able to, do the delivery. So, obviously, he knows how to do it better than Maggie does.
Correct.
Lori's running with the baby. One of the governor's people shoots her. Lori falls on the baby, which kills the baby. The woman of the governor's group who shot Lori realizes she just shot a woman with a baby, which makes her realize how crazy the governor is. And in the comics, the governor is much worse than he is in the TV show.
When he came back, I was like, was he really coming back? And then I was kind of happy that he came back and did the half season. Because I really disliked him. He just was a shitty character, in my opinion, on the last season. Not the first half of this season. For some reason, he just rubbed me the wrong way. But when he came back, I liked the way they brought him back for the 8 episodes. So.
And the funny part, literally in the comics, he ties Michonne up and rapes her constantly, day for days on end. And that's why she decides to mutilate him.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because they can't really show that. Because they almost showed him raping Maggie. But
in the comic, like I said, he's much worse. He actually cuts off Rick's hand, which is why for months on end, J.J. Stoner was like, come on, man. Come on. Rick's definitely losing that hand, guys. He's definitely losing that hand. That's why you heard that so much on 360 and 420. But, dude, and again, though, I do kind of like the fact that they decided to stay kind of true, but not. Fucking Red Sox. I'm not going to distract Punchy. I'm going to distract Punchy for a second, and I'm sorry, but look who showed up at UFC paper. Oh, yeah, I saw it. CM Punk was at the UFC pay-per-view tonight in the crowd. So he's been on more UFC pay-per-views in the last month than WWE pay-per-views. So, but again, I think it's starting to, third season was all right. Left a little to be desired, but the first half of the season, and then so far what I like what I see of this half of the season. Maybe they can finally have a showrunner last for more than a minute. That would be nice. Could they not fire their executive producers every 5 seconds? That would be nice. AMC, you could do that. It won't hurt anybody. Let's be honest. What we're going to do, we're going to go on a break. It's going to be a long break because in the middle of the break, like I said, we're pretty much doing a partnership with Zenoscope Entertainment. And the first such collaboration is going to be played at the middle of the break. It's going to be an interview with Anthony Spey. And the interview is about 28 minutes long, so that's going to take up a good chunk of the show. But, again, it's going to be surrounded by breaks. So, we'll be back, guys. This is the Nerd Hour, folks. See you.
Hey, listeners. Yes, that means you. Missed your favorite More Like Radio shows live? No problem. Just go to morelikeradio.com/downloads. That's morelikeradio.com/downloads. More Like Radio's RSS feed works with your iThings, Zooms, Androids, Windows Phone, and anything else that can subscribe to an RSS feed. If you're so awesome that you only get your podcasts from iTunes, you can subscribe to our feed in iTunes by clicking the Subscribe to iTunes link right on the Downloads page. So what are you waiting for? Download More Like Radio podcasts and subscribe to our feed now. Yes, right now. Do it.
Are you a comedian that has trouble?
Everybody's a hack, I know. Everybody's a hack, I get it. Shut up. Swing. I'm a dopey fucking shit comic.
You're an asshole.
Fuck you. Was there really a ramrod in? That's a cock joke. Swing. I'm not an unpleasant person. You know what I'm having for the first time today?
Period.
Shut up. I'm fucking pissy. Insert queer joke here. Call me a faggot and hit me with a stick.
I think he's a comic.
I love you.
He gave me the finger.
Fuck you. Because of my big mouth, I made this woman laugh. Fucking jerk-offs.
Not bad for a guy that's got nothing.
Shut up. I'm not an unpleasant person. Fuck you. Conti Kenny Show. Fuck you. Dicks.
Many of us grew up reading the works of Jules Verne and books like Treasure Island, great classic fantasy novels. I love reading fantasy, but most of the fantasy novels released today read like a role-playing game. I'm interested in characters and stories when reading fantasy novels, and I found a fantasy novel written with the story and the characters as the focus. The book is titled Daughter of Vengeance, and the author is David Timrick. David Timrick is a self-published author who has written several books, and they are all top-rated on Amazon. Daughter of Vengeance is a story about a young lady who's thrust into a world of espionage, betrayal, and murder. A survivor at heart, she befriends a master assassin who takes her as his apprentice. After years of training and careful planning, she begins her life as one of the king's many spies. Unknown to her, a plot has slowly been unraveling, which will not only destroy the fragile peace of the kingdom, but could descend the world into chaos and war. Can Michelle rise above the shortcomings and failures of her predecessors and set right the wrongs done centuries before? And will her life be the ultimate price she pays for the sins of others? You'll have to read Daughter of Vengeance by David Timrick to find out. So visit his website, davidtimrick.com, to buy your copy today. David Timrick, T-E-M-R-I-C-K, davidtimrick.com. Daughter of Vengeance is available on Kindle and in paperback.
Listen to Unsigned Hype every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, on MoreLikeRadio.com. It's hosted by Sir Darkside, a.k.a. at Darkside Rules on Twitter. Check out the show for dope interviews, exclusive releases from artists such as Brother Ali, Mally, Kelly Mays, Rex Leosis, MOA, and Aesop Rock. It doesn't get better than this. Every Tuesday night on MoreLikeRadio.com is the Unsigned Hype.
Unsigned Hype. Frontline, never known it's blurry. Zero dark 30, zero friends, a minotaur, fuck they stepchild. A boat once jumped over plunging netlines. Up beside tongue tied, hungry enzymes. Devolved in a mothman, munching textiles.
All right, and this is Mike from More Like Radio and the Nerd Hour, and I'm here with Anthony Spey of Zenoscope Entertainment. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Now, before we started recording, I do want to point out that we were just talking wrestling a little bit. So I'm going to start off by asking an impromptu question. And are you a buyer of the WWE Network Day One?
I have not purchased it yet, but I will be purchasing it. I'm planning on it, yes.
Yeah, I know it starts on Monday, but they're giving it the 1 week free trial. So if you don't want to spend the $60 for 6 months to try it out, there you go.
Yeah, it's definitely good. Definitely something good to give a shot to. I'm going to nice thing to have going on in the background while I'm drawing.
Yeah, it is, and it's one of those new things that, I mean, you pay for 6 months. It's the same as paying for a pay-per-view, but you're only paying $60 for the 6 months at $10 a month. You're not paying $60 each month for just one pay-per-view.
Yeah, I thought it was a great deal, so I was giving it a shot. Yeah,
exactly. Even if CM Punk took his ball and went home, but. Regardless.
Yeah.
Regardless, I'm going to, we're going to get back to the regular questions here. First off, what got you into comics to begin with?
I've always been into comics from the time I was a little kid in, like, kindergarten. I think the school that I went to pushed a lot of creative writing and art, and I think that was kind of a natural fit, and I started doing little cartoon comic characters and stuff back then. And, you know, growing up in the 80s, we had a lot of superhero and comic book-based cartoons, and I think I just got into it that way. You know, it was just something I've kind of always been into, sketching out superheroes and different comic book characters. And, you know, as I've gotten older and matured a bit, some of my tastes have matured with me, but, you know, I've kind of always been into it.
I'm noticing it's no coincidence that now that the children of the 80s are kind of adults now and are doing things in the entertainment industry, that we've kind of seen a creative boom in that industry, in all forms, in comics, TV, movies.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, people are just, like, they've taken the medium so much further, and just, it's gotten, I mean, there's still plenty of stuff for young people, but there's plenty of things for adults as well, because that's who's the group that's been the biggest fan of it, so they're making things that are more, more reflective of their current state of mind, I guess, you know?
Exactly. I mean, and that's a thing, too, Nat, like, probably when we were kids, cartoons were just strictly for kids. There was very little for the adults. They were just basically tolerating it because it shut their kid up for 2 hours. Now, like, you watch, like, a Pixar movie or even a recent example, the Lego movie, and, like, there's stuff for people our age.
Yeah, they always throw in things to make it for everybody. Even something like SpongeBob, which at first glance would be a very childlike cartoon. Like, you can watch it as an adult and laugh and not feel like you're being cheesy by laughing at it. It's like legitimately funny, and there's plenty of things for other people, that even maybe some stuff that the kids might not get, you know.
Yeah, and now it's to the point where now there's cartoons aimed specifically at adults.
Yeah,
especially say Archer or South Park
and all the Cartoon Network stuff, pretty much, especially the like late at night stuff, you know.
Yeah, all of that. And and which brings me to another point. Growing up, what was also some of your interests outside of comics, aside from wrestling, which you just touched on?
You know, I've been into a lot of different things. I did music growing up. I've played sports all growing up through high school, and like football, basketball, ice hockey. I played them all. And so I was pretty much comic books and sports with a side of music. You know, so I did a little bit of everything.
What kind of music were you into?
I actually played in the orchestra. I was a viola player.
Wow, really?
That, yeah.
That I didn't know. Yeah. That's actually pretty interesting. That, I mean, I wasn't like an orchestra guy. I wasn't good enough to play the instruments, but like, I was into like a lot of the heavier music. But still, that's another thing too. People who are into music, whether playing it or very into music, also wind up being creative types.
Yeah. Well, I'm into the heavier music myself as well. I wasn't. I don't know if I started playing the viola when I was a kid because I was such a huge classical music buff. I just happened to be playing it, you know. But, yeah, no, absolutely. I have appreciation for all different kinds of art and music, and there's definitely a lot of crossover there.
And you mentioned heavier bands, so I got to ask, what are some of your favorite bands that you're listening to now?
I am pretty much into the hard rock and screaming devil voice heavy metal. So I'm still like a Maiden fan. I'm a big Van Halen guy. Some of the new bands I like Avenged Sevenfold. I like Coheed and Cambria, some of their stuff. I mean, I like a lot of different things. I like some rap too, although not really the newest of the new stuff. It's not my favorite, but so I'm into all different things pretty much.
Well, it's actually pretty good to stay diverse like that. And also, since you did mention sports and you played football, what's your team?
I'm an Eagles fan.
Eagles?
Yeah.
I'm a 49ers fan. I get to watch my team's rival win the Super Bowl. That was rough.
Yeah, but you've had a pretty good team the last couple of years, so I think I have a few good years ahead as well, so there's something to look forward to at least.
Hey, I think you guys got a bright future with Napoleon Foles at quarterback.
Oh, we're pretty happy. We're looking forward to the future. Andy Reid's run was good, but by the end of it, I think it was a little bit of time for the change in the eyes of the fans. So we're excited to see how the Chip Kelly era goes.
I think he's going to do well. Then college coaches have been doing well. Also, some people might not know, but you also have worked for the financial sector at PFCP.
Yeah, PFPC was part of PNC Bank. I mean, I went to I didn't go to college, at least undergrad, for art. I did a double major, but my main thing. I was a management major. So I went there and I started doing some financial stuff, working with mutual funds. And I kind of took art classes on the side. And but I think it was good to have kind of a classical education background when it comes to working a little bit of the, you know, if you want to call it executive area or administrative area of the comic book business, and even in editorial, like not just being only trained as an artist, you also know how to manage people and write and have some other skills that have been developed as well, you know.
Yeah, and was there anything you picked up from working in that sector for so long that helped you now in the comic industry?
Mostly the main thing is just how to work with other people. I mean, as an artist, like a lot of artists, they work alone. I mean, I prefer to work alone when I'm doing artwork. But if you don't have that experience working around other people, like you could, like a lot of artists will get offended by criticism, or they just aren't as comfortable taking direction or even like giving direction, you know. So just the, like maintaining relationships and working with people in like a respectful manner where everybody gets along, but you still are able to get your point across and get your work done and motivate people to do it is a good, I think if there were some skills that I learned in other areas of my career before doing comic books.
And I can kind of picture comic book and comic books, just like any other form of art or entertainment, you would kind of need those skills because, I mean, it's very network-based as far as advancement.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, sorry. And I was going to say, and you also interned for DC Comics. What was that like?
It was enjoyable. I was in grad school at SCAD at the time, and about 2004, I went up to New York, and like 3 or 4 days a week, I crashed with my friend that lived in New York, and I would go in there and just kind of just observe. I had like some little tasks. I would do like placing the lettering balloons on the pages and kind of picking some of the editor's brains as far as like what I could do to improve as an artist and what you would need to do to become an editor. And I mean, it was a really good experience. I mean, they were really busy. Like the editors up there, like they did, I mean, they worked really hard and they did, they were very busy with work, but they always made time to like talk to us. And even if you're just sitting there and like, they might've been on the phone with somebody and just observing how they dealt with them and the kind of things they looked for. We would go over how they came up with different ads and things in the back of the books. Like there, so there was a lot more of the, not necessarily as much of the editorial of the artwork, but as far as how everything's run, I learned a lot of it there.
And knowing that you interned there, and I believe it was during 2004 you were there, and being a big Green Lantern fan, was there the buzz of Rebirth happening, or was that before, or were you there before then?
I think I was a little before Green Lantern. I could not – I'm trying to remember. There were a couple of I mean, they're always happy. They were always happy to see him, but even though they worked for DC, there was a big – like it was almost a community. Like everybody knew each other, whether you worked for DC or Marvel, and, like, you know, they'd send each other their books. And so, like, I think they wanted to just see the industry do well as well, you know. But there was definitely a big push. It was the beginning of the push for Green Lantern, at least, because I remember there were a lot of trades being printed, reprints of old trades, trying to really push that product. So I think they were definitely looking forward to it.
And I do want to point out, I think Hal Jordan was the Spectre at that point.
Yeah.
And if you could pick one title that's currently out there to work for, regardless of publisher that you haven't worked on yet, what would it be?
That's a tough one. I would like to work on either Flash, Captain Marvel, Shazam, or Plastic Man. I always like those three characters. I think I could do something really fun with Plastic Man.
that would probably be ideal for someone who does art because, I mean, just all the possibilities with a character who can morph themselves into any object pretty much.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a fun character, but there's so many different areas you can explore about what he can do and things like that. I always thought that would be really cool. I mean, Kyle Baker's run on it was great, but, I mean, there's been a lot of different versions of him, and he's kind of different in each one. It's pretty cool.
And I've also, doing research for the interview, read that you actually would go up to editors at Wizard World Philly with your portfolio, which is what a lot of artists do when they first get discovered. Seeing as now you're an art director with Zenoscope, has advancements in social media changed how new artists get discovered in the industry?
Oh, absolutely. People, I mean, they contact me on Facebook, and I mean, I'm not afraid to give out my card or my email address, and people, I mean, honestly, Zenoscope's a small company. I mean, I know we all know each other, the people who work there. If somebody sends something to, like, the submissions email and doesn't have my personal email, they send it right to me anyway, so I'll see it, you know, and but yeah, definitely Facebook is a big one that people send things over to me. And there's people that maybe have emailed me something, or I met at a convention that I told to keep working on certain things, or that I kept my eye on that maybe I didn't think were quite ready yet, but I thought had a lot of potential. And then I follow them on Facebook myself and keep an eye on it too. So that's, and I mean, I've also been known to contact people out of the blue that I haven't talked to in a while. If I see that they're doing something good, and I say, hey, I think you're ready to go. Would you like to give something a shot? So, yeah, there's definitely a lot more ways to contact people now. But there's also a lot higher volume of people contacting you as well, which makes it hard to respond to everything, you know.
And how much freedom are you given by the writers of the issues when you actually draw the art for an issue? Are some more specific about how they want it to look than others?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, with me, I mean, at this point, especially since I'm kind of, I have a lot more to do with the designs of the overall characters and everything. Like, I have pretty much almost unlimited freedom because I know what they want almost inherently just because I'm around talking to them. And then I also design the character, so I'm probably not going to, like, change the look of the characters too much. But, yeah, we do give some people some freedom. It also depends on the writer, how specific their layout is, or the way they write the script, how they lay out the panels. Some people have a more detailed description than other writers. And so, yeah, we definitely do let people do their own style. And, you know, especially for covers, like, we'll let them do, like, a different take on the characters a lot of times. Like, if you've seen some of our covers, Jamie Tindall, he has his own style where he adds a whole lot of little different adornments and details to the characters, and people love it and they think it's cool. So when we have him do an exclusive, a lot of times it won't be the exact look of the character that's a book, but his take on it, you know.
And actually, and the covers do kind of catch the attention. That's actually how I first got into some Zenoscope issues. I think it was back in 2010 when I was at New York Comic Con, and I got two of the exclusives and then got a bunch of issues to read on the way home.
Yeah, the content of the issues is a little different than the exclusives. We kind of – the covers, a lot of times, different people are looking for different things, you know. So some people will like the exclusives with the girls on the covers. And then the interiors are not always quite as, risque. They're a lot more, like, classic comic style, like, adventure-based. So I think there's a little something for everyone, like, the different kinds of collectors.
I will say, when I read the issues, I liked them enough where I, like, sought out other issues to read. So, like, what's inside is actually fantastic.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Also, having written Grimm Universe 4, has that changed how you do art for other writers? Or did the fact that you started off doing art impact how you wrote the issue?
Oh, absolutely. It definitely impacted how I write. I wrote Grimm 96 as well, which is in production right now, so that should be out in like a month or so. But it definitely impacts how I write because, I mean, I still think as an artist, so I think maybe some artists may have a hard time putting into pictures what they have in their head that might be maybe more applicable on in like something that captures motion, like video. I think I automatically think in still pictures, like in the comic book storytelling. So as I'm writing, like coming up with page breakdowns and things like that, it's almost automatic. And where I have to really do my thinking is more in the dialogue and everything like that. Like I'm kind of acting out and visualizing each page as I'm writing it, because I understand that way of storytelling almost inherently at this point. So I think that definitely has affected it.
And you actually, in that issue, you got to write the origin story of the Dark One. Did you seek out input from past writers, from the various series, or the creators? Or did you see it kind of as a clean slate to make the origin as you saw fit?
I mean, there. No, I definitely spoke. I spoke to Raven Gregory a lot. He wrote part of it. Not part. He didn't write part. He wrote part of the Grim Myths and Legends issue, where he goes into the volcano. Like, this is almost something that built off the issue that he wrote. And then I also spoke to Joe, who created the character, Joe Brusha. And so we worked it out between the three of us pretty much. And, I mean, as far as the actual story itself, I pretty much came up with that. But, I mean, we all had to work together to make it work into the Grimm universe, to make it work as part of the, like, time-wise and according to, like, this scheduled time for the other books and things like that, so it made sense, you know.
Yeah. And going back to the main title, Grimm Fairy Tales, that's been around for almost a decade now, and it's very close to its 100th issue, and it's rare for a non-Big Two comic book to get to 100 issues. How is the office buzz as a whole for prepping for that milestone?
Oh, I think everybody's really excited. Everybody's really proud of it. I'm actually going to be drawing the issue I'm about to start now, actually. But so that's going to be the first issue I've done for a while. But it's something we've been building towards. Grim Fairy Tales 100, like from 99, and then there's going to be the Giants, or the 99, the Grim Annual, the Giant Size, and then Grim 100 is going to be the fourth in the series. So those four issues are all going to combine together specifically. But most of the Grim stuff we're doing right now is all part of our big Age of Darkness event that's kind of involving most of the different books, even Wonderland and Robin Hood and things like that. Like, so they're all going to kind of come together in Grim 100 when the Dark Queen makes her big move.
It'll be exciting to see, and I'm sure there will be, just like with the Walking Dead 100, I'm sure there will be multiple variants for people to collect, too.
Oh, there will. I am not sure who I am allowed to announce is on it yet. I can't announce that I have done one for it. But there's definitely some big name artists, and the covers I've seen coming along, they're really great. So they should be out for people to see soon.
And that's another thing your company's very good with, too, as far as, like, the incentives and variants, because that's kind of the new, like, drawing power for as far as people who collect, because comics are now more readily available than they used to be. So that's kind of like the one thing now, as opposed to people used to buy, like, issue ones for comics back in the 90s or before.
Yeah.
Now it's incentives. And you guys have been ahead of that market, doing very well with that. That's something I'm just pointing out.
No, absolutely. You're right. And, I mean, all the people that buy our books really like the incentives. And I think what we try to do is that we don't want to do, like, the kind of incentives they did in the 90s, like the foil covers and all the different, like, just, like variants. Like a lot of our incentives are completely new pieces of artwork that are really good by all different artists that people like. So, I mean, we might have two or three different covers for the book, but they're all really strong separate pieces of artwork in their own right, which I think is, you know, it's a whole new piece of artwork for people to collect. So I think that's what people like as well. They aren't just like cheesy color change variants, you know.
Yeah, and they're creative depending on where they're available, like the different convention ones. You can kind of tell, oh, this one's from New Orleans Comic Con or this is from New York Comic Con, because there's a theme of the city that it's being sold at, which I think is also a great part about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's very important to us, that we like to have our themes, and each month of this year has a different theme for the month, and then we even tailor that further to the cities. And, you know, I know when I do my covers, and I know a lot of other people do the same thing, and when Ralph or Joe will come up with the concepts for the exclusives, you know, we try to do a little research into each city, like maybe what's the big landmark, what they're known for, even if it's, I mean, we live in Philadelphia area, so we know a lot of the East Coast cities as well, but if we're going to Houston, we want to see what Houston's signature location or food or whatever it is, and then we'll try to make a cover based around that. And people, I know when I went to Dragon Con, I had them at this place called the Varsity, and that's like a landmark down there in Atlanta. And when people were coming out, they loved it because it's, like, specific to their town. It's, like, something they can hang on to. I thought it was cool.
And do you read any titles now, or what titles have you been reading recently?
I try to read when I can. I mean, I'm very busy. I read all of our titles. I still kind of gravitate towards some of the DC characters as far as a fan, what I read. I mean, I'm a big Flash guy. I like all the Batman books. I pick up some Marvel stuff. I always read like X-Men and stuff like that. But like, I kind of mix it up. If I see something I like, I mean, I'll grab a lot of the Mike Mignola kind of BPRD Dark Horse books. I mean, I kind of spread it around. So,
and I've got to ask, since it's been a pretty big story when it happened, what are your thoughts on the whole Forever Evil One on DC, them unmasking Dick Grayson?
I mean, sometimes I think people take it a little too seriously. I liked it. I mean, there's so many characters in the Batman, like, universe. I mean, there's three Robins, essentially, with him, Damian, and Tim Drake. I mean, they're going to have to start messing around with him at some point.
Yeah. I think if they had done it to Tim Drake, there wouldn't have been as big of an issue.
Because he's not as well-liked, I guess.
Yeah, well, not so much that, but he's not as well-liked over so many different generations.
Right, right.
And Dick Grayson is pretty much considered like the Peter Parker of DC.
Very true, very true. I mean, I like Dick Grayson. I think, I don't know, I'm curious to see what happens. Sometimes things change when you least expect it. Yeah. So he may be back in a different role at some point.
He'll probably get another identity or whatever.
Exactly.
One thing I noticed when looking at your artwork is that you have very realistic proportions in drawing people. Like, you rarely do the, what I'll call it, the early 90s style. You don't see guys that are too hulking or the hourglass figure where everything looks like it'd be compacted too much.
Yeah, I think a part of it is I've always kind of liked the realistic style or at least the realistic proportions. I mean, I grew up, my favorite guy was George Perez. He was my all-time favorite artist. And, like, his style is a classic comic book style, but proportionally they're pretty straightforward, you know. And that's kind of what I started molding myself after. And then also, just as you learn as a comic book artist, what they, you know, every editor and teacher and everybody that I ever had, the thing that they pound in your head is anatomy and proportion. Like, you have to understand all that stuff and get it right. And then you can start messing with it. But I actually kind of like going in the more realistic direction. You know, I'm a big fan of Ivan Reis's work over at DC, and he kind of keeps it to pretty realistic proportions as well. I just haven't going too cartoony and too stylized. It's just not, that's not necessarily what I read, so that's not really what I do. I appreciate other people's art styles, and I can see that they're great, and I can see why people are fans of them, you know. But as far as me, I definitely like to go to the more realistic proportions.
All right, and the last actual question, and I actually, again, while doing prep for this interview, I saw a video where I think you were at a convention in the UK, and someone actually brought some of their artwork for you to kind of critique and give advice on. Is that something you do because you remember being in that role when you were trying to break in?
Absolutely, yeah. When I'm at the shows and somebody asks me for a review, I always try to. I mean, there have been times where they say you have 5 minutes per person, and you have to send them on their way. And I'm like, okay. But I mean, if they catch me at a show, like, I'll take my time as long as it takes to look at their stuff and talk to them. And I mean, afterwards, I mean, as an artist, like, when I was trying to break in, people would say they really like my stuff, and I'd send them my work, and I wouldn't get a response. But now, since I'm on the other side, I kind of understand, just because you get such a massive volume of emails per day that I can't always respond. But if you catch me there at the show, like, I'll absolutely take as much time as you need, or as much as I can spare to give people critique, because, I mean, you know, not everybody. The other thing is, like, I went to art school for comics in grad school. Not everybody does that. A lot of people are self-taught and are just, it's hard to find your way in the industry if you don't know exactly what you're doing. It's a very small industry. It's very, it's very hard to get like information out. So when you meet somebody, I try to help them as much as I can, as much as possible. Like any advice I can give them, I'm happy to give it, you know?
Which I think is always a fantastic thing. And what I tried to do at Comic-Con one year when Guillermo del Toro was doing a signing, but they kind of rushed me away after a minute, security. because there was such a long line,
yeah.
They were telling us beforehand, oh, you can't really talk to him. And then he just started talking anyway. So I was like, all right, I'm going to get what I can while there. And the next thing I'm going to let you do before we wrap up the interview is if you got anything to plug, go right ahead.
Absolutely. We're plugging. We have some new books. The new books coming out. We're going to have, obviously, Grim 100. We're going to have the new Helsing series come out, which is going to be great. Warlord of Oz. It's going to be a second volume of our Oz series, which is hugely successful. And Realm War, which is going to be the conclusion to the whole Age of Darkness thing, starting right after Grim 100. So those are some of the main books we have coming up this year. And I also just wanted to mention, you can go check them out at the Zenoscope Twitter page. It's like Twitter at Zenoscope. And same thing with the Facebook page, Facebook.com/Zenoscope and Zenoscope.com. And my pages are on Facebook as Artist Anthony Spey. And my Twitter page is at Anthony B. Spey. So those are you can keep in touch with me that way. And I'm happy to talk to everybody. And I should have some previews of artwork coming up soon. And hopefully everybody enjoys them.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to do this interview, Anthony.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. And this is Mike Falcone. We're going back to break.
Talk Radio Meltdown.
He just wrote a song, put it on an album. The album came out, went to number one, and a few weeks later, he's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm gay, and if you want to know why, listen to this particular track.
Oh,
everyone did, and they found out. It's like, oh, the song's apparently about how much he wants to fuck a dude. Okay. That's logical.
Well, with the verse, like, I want a dick up my ass repeatedly with balls touching my bum.
Is that really the lyrics? I'm not familiar with this band.
Talk Radio Meltdown every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on morelikeradio.com.
Hey, everybody. This is Alexa. You can hear my Uncle Sean say terrible things on a Hippo Juice show. Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Followed by the Red Show from 9 to 11. And now Mark Out Radio with Big T and Dark Fox is on Wednesday, too. Join them during their new time slot, 11 to 1 a.m., only on morelikeradio.com.
Hi, this is Anthony Spey, artist for Zenoscope Entertainment, publisher of Grim Fairy Tales, Oz, and many other great titles. You're listening to More Like Radio.
Yeah.
You didn't ask him the tree question, prick.
Well, you already knew that, though.
They didn't know.
Yes, see, Cornex won.
Fucking breaking piece of shit.
And they don't care either.
Their lives are not affected. When I do the next interview with him, I will ask the tree question.
You suck.
What kind of tree would you be, Cornax?
Yeah, what kind?
A ficus.
Ficus is a plant, asshole.
Exactly. That's a real fucker.
All right, so again, that interview that I just played, it's a classic example of me taking what should have been 15 minutes and turning it into 28 minutes. Which is my interview style, pretty much.
Which is pretty much how you joined every single show you've been a part of.
Yeah, it was, I'm going to appear once or twice. I'll be fine. And then all of a sudden, I'm a show member.
Exactly how you joined 360 on 420, isn't it? You called in, And then you became a cast member.
Well, that and, like, at the time, like, a lot of the hosts weren't able to do the show. I think Nodorf was still in California, and Judge was in school.
Nodorf is in the same town now, and he doesn't do the show.
Well, he's becoming a married man. That will be the best wedding ever, I've got to say.
Do you think they'll move into the same trailer?
I think, aren't they already living together, Nodorf's and...
No.
Oh, you mean Nodorf's and JJ.
Exactly.
I don't know. Like, they already were living in the same trailer for a bit in that case.
That'd have to be...
And then he ran off because of the...
Then he ran off to become a decent man.
No, he ran off to avoid getting the shit beat out of him because of that fucking megaphone.
Oh, yes. Across the room, Jethro. Who could forget? Yeah, I'm going to ask you guys if you guys remember these movies. You know what I watched when I was before I started prepping for the episode today?
I remember that.
No. I didn't say the title. Dick.
Oh, okay.
Douche. I watched The Golden Child and Big Trouble in Little China.
Why are you watching children, Punchy?
You know what I'm talking about, the Eddie Murphy movie. Ass.
There's still a child in there that you were watching, though.
Yeah, but Eddie Murphy was looking for him, so who looks like the bad guy, huh?
Wait, so you were watching a big black man stalk a little child, and you did nothing about it? You are a terrible person.
Well, we're all terrible people.
Listen, all right? There are a million reasons why I could be considered a terrible person. That's not one of them. Let's face it.
No, that's just one of them.
One of them. And I forgot how good those movies were. Like, they still entertain me to this day. Whereas, like, I when I watch them, I was like, all right, am I still going to like these movies? Or, you know, or is it just one of those examples where what you thought was cool as a kid is not as cool now?
Muppets Take Manhattan will always be cool.
Space Jam will always be cool.
No, Space Jam.
Fuck you, Space Jam is awesome.
Space Jam will never be cool.
Fuck you, Space Jam is awesome.
And Red Sox, Punchy's only a part-time member of 360. Well, yeah, because I have a job and I, you know, need to get sleep.
Yes, Red Sox, Punchy does fuck children, and so does Scrambler.
That's not true.
Hey, listen, don't drag me into your bit.
No, my bit is slowly stalking after people and hiding in the closet.
Oh, okay.
And then when they're asleep, I cut off their eyelids so that they have to look into my eyes.
All right, relax.
Because I hate fuck their chest with a knife.
Okay.
Relax, right. Unchin Andalo. Fucking relax. But it reminded me, like, I can't believe that Big Trouble in Little China didn't have better success in the box office than it did.
You're surprised by that? Stop that.
Come on, that movie
you're,
like...
You're not.
Huh?
You're not surprised.
Dude.
It's an awesome movie, but it's not, like...
Oh, did you see
not
some...
blockbuster.
Did you see some of the movies that were blockbusters back then? Really? That one couldn't be?
Well, offhand... As much of a cinephile as I am, I can't just list all of the movies that came out in a certain year.
Yeah, especially not a movie in the 80s.
Remember the He-Man movie?
Big Trouble in Little China, 86.
Yeah,
86. I'm going to do a little 1986 looking real quick here.
You go do that. But like, and I pointed out in the interview, you notice a lot of the people now who are like, making TV shows or making movies or doing just things in entertainment in general are children of the 80s.
Yes, you said that in the interview.
I know. I'm pointing that out, Dick. I said that in the interview.
All right. I got 1986. These are the top 10 movies on IMDb. Big Trouble, Little China, number 10. A much better movie, Blue Velvet, number 9. Pretty in Pink, Labyrinth, About Last Night, Platoon, Aliens, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Top Gun, and Stand By Me. Wasn't that bad of a year for movies, Punchy?
No, it was not that bad. I don't mean in 86. I mean the 80s in general.
Oh, yeah, the 80s were horrendous.
Holy crap. like that was actually a really good year.
Yeah, well, as far as the 80s go, yeah, there's a lot of classic movies in there that people will watch. Actually, all of those movies are pretty classic. And Labyrinth is just so creepy to me.
And a lot of them, for the most part, still, like, stand pretty well, pretty good ground. And listen, Cornax, I could afford my family could afford Transformers, all right? Let's just say food stamps were traded for cash and I got Optimus Prime.
Can we explain that to anyone listening on the podcast?
All right. In the chat, Cornax said GoBots because he's talking about a figure that of his. And Red Sox asks, what the fuck are GoBots?
And I said the Transformers Punchy's family could afford.
But like I said, listen...
Got that punch money. Got that breadstick money.
Just trying to get my GoBots, guys. But, like, literally, this is how I would get a lot of my action figures back in the day when I was a kid. I'd do chores around the house if they were short on cash, because my family was on food stamps when I was a kid. We were poor. My mom was a single parent trying to raise two kids. At the time, trying to actually, like, go to school to be... She was waitressing and going to school to be a medical assistant.
All they could afford was Falcone's breadsticks.
Hey, listen, we also make cookies, goddammit.
Oh, you want cookies?
Oh, boy, here we go.
These are the shittiest toys I've ever seen, by the way.
What, GoBots?
I just put a picture of all of the GoBots. They're horrendous. They're like Transformers that don't have moving parts.
They are.
Well, no, actually, comparing them to the original Transformers, some of them were actually pretty decent because they didn't have parts that removed or anything like that.
Oh, so their lack of functionality made them more durable. Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm pointing out is that they could actually transform all in one piece. And also, I only got one of them because it was the only one that looked good. It's a Rolls-Royce Phantom that turns into a robot with a top hat. If you're going to tell me that's not fucking awesome, then you are dead on the inside, my friend.
I think the top hat is what did it for me. Yeah. I'll let it go.
The top hat does kind of do it, I've got to say.
Oh, look at how shitty these things are.
Wow. Oh, yeah, they are.
Those look like shit. Those look horrible.
This look like something only you could afford, Punny.
Hey.
Look at what I just put into chat. The GoBots Command Center. It looks like a walker from Star Wars without
it is, actually. Get this. It folds out like that, but they also the legs become treads. And then get this, it stands up and become a standing robot.
Oh, I see how it could stand up. Yep. It kind of looks like it would be Bender if it stood up from what I'm seeing here laying. As it crawls, it looks like it would be Bender.
There's a reason why Tonka sold the brand to Hasbro.
Yeah.
Why Hasbro buried the GoBots. That's the one I got.
Red Sox, poor Punchy. It explains why he's an attention-seeking whore that's on every show today, though. Well, listen. I don't know if we have time to go through the list of psychological and emotional issues that show why I'm an attention-seeking whore that's on every single radio show on the network just to get attention, and probably explains why I want to do a lot of things I want to do in life. Probably does, I'd say. But you know, this is not the psychological hour; it's the nerd hour, and holy shit, it does have a top hat.
Yes, it does. And the front grill becomes its codpiece.
That's the best description there is, actually. I was like, can't he find something better to call it than a codpiece? Nope, that's what it is.
It's like a little Hot Wheels-sized thing, and it actually has rubber tires and die-cast metal in it.
Is the top hat permanent? Like you
yes,
don't have
it
to,
is. It's
don't
part
have to
of the head.
Okay, you don't have to lose the top hat and like go steal one out of Monopoly to fix your GoBot, right?
And the head is completely chrome vacuum metalized plastic, chromed. And then it's got chromed blue eyes.
Can I just point out, I wish we could get a redo on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D rant.
Why?
Because we kept blue screening while it was happening. I think next time Ariel's on, I'm going to bring that movie up.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Oh, God. And that is death. I'll tell you what. There are very few people who like GoBots. And that thing that Scrambler just posted in the chat is one of the most notoriously shitty ones of them all. Not even fans of a series like that thing. Here's how bad it is. That thing was the annoying Kid Appeal character who made Bumblebee from the Transformers look like fucking Shaft.
It looks like if R2-D2 took a shit that was in the shape of a Vespa. That's what it looks like.
You know what the worst part
Dude,
is?
Dude, I remember that character from GoBots.
Hold on. Do you know what the worst part about that is? Do you know who... all right. That character...
sounded like this. This was his voice, Cowboy.
That was kind of his voice. Do you know who did that voice for him?
Who?
Frank Welker, the voice of Generation 1 Megatron.
Yep, who actually does a voice.
Optimus Prime.
He does a voice in The Golden Child. He plays like I guess the devil's voice in it.
Yes, I can kind of see this being Satan.
How do I say it? He also voiced Toka and Raza in the Ninja Turtles movie, the second one.
Dude, up until a little while ago, he was the most highly one of the most highly paid actors in Hollywood. And I bet you if you said Frank Welker to just a random person who didn't know much about voice acting or anything, they wouldn't know who the fuck he was.
Actually, I think it was something like he made his movies the most total gross yes. in movies.
Yeah, films with Frank Welker have had grossed more than those of any other actor in Hollywood from 1980 until 2011.
When Sam Jackson...
So for 31 years... His movies gross more than anyone else, and I bet you very few people would know who you were talking about if you just walked up to him and said, Frank Welker.
I will say, though, because like, it went through 2011. Samuel Jackson's resume was a little padded way in 2011, because I think that was around the time of Iron Man.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little padded.
Oh, whatever. It's Sam Jackson. You know, let's give it to him.
No, I'm definitely giving it to him, but, like, the Marvel movies definitely put him over the top. Clearly put him over the top. Actually,
And Red Sox, that's exactly why I only have one of them. The one of them that I think does not suck, because he's fucking awesome.
Yes.
He has a grill as a codpiece, and he has a top hat, and becomes a Rolls-Royce Phantom.
And actually, up to 2011 includes Captain America, the First Avenger, Thor, which he had cameos in, Iron Man 1 and 2.
Oh, that is padded to shit.
So every movie where he did the 30 seconds after the credits?
Yes.
Okay.
And then
that's bullshit.
Stopped, no matter the cost.
And then since then, he's done Django Unchained, The Avengers.
Okay, I'll give him those.
And then he's going to do the Winter Soldier coming up.
Right, I'll give him that as well because he's probably going to have a big role.
Avengers Age of Ultron.
Well, of course he's going to have a big role.
Yeah, so that resume is going to look really padded. I don't think anyone will ever break that mark.
Did the Nobody Stops Megatron come across here?
Yes.
Okay.
I heard it.
Because we were talking about that guy. He does have a great voice, though. For a 30-year-old cartoon.
Red Sox in chat, this really is N-bomb form of Transformers. Holy shit.
Yeah, that GoPed.
Just exactly why I said they're
so shitty. So wait, this are the GoBots, do they exist still?
Yes and no.
You have a Rolls-Royce Phantom, and those haven't been around for forever, so...
Well, no. The original toy line for GoBots stopped, as did the cartoon. Technically, they still show up, though, either as in continuity things, or they recently had a tribute to them with Transformers, but they didn't re-release the actual figures. They took old Transformers figures and repainted them and turned them into GoBots characters. It was a weird storyline where they had to disguise themselves to look like Transformers, and it was odd.
Oh, they even had shitty names, too.
Look, I'm going to tell you this. The thing I have is called Tux, the one with the top hat, and that's one of the better names.
I'm looking at one right now. It's a sports car that has a spoiler on the back of it, the name of the car, spoiler. There is a race car its name is Slicks and a car named Spoons.
Okay. No, Spoons is forklift.
I'm sorry. It is a forklift. The packaging, it's hard to see what
it
is.
And the only reason I know that is because I had one guy who made a tons of Spoons jokes for this one Transformer that was a forklift. But here's how bad it was. All right. The good guy was named Leader 1. That's Leader-1. Not too bad, kind of basic. Do you know what the main villain's name was?
Villain 2?
No. He was a motorcycle, and his name was Cy-Kill. C-Y hyphen kill.
What?
Red Sox just found the offshoot. The Rock Lords, yes.
Wait,
these were robots into rocks.
An inanimate object that transforms into another inanimate object.
Yes. You could go to the schoolyard and you could go, a Mod Transformer turns into a train and a space shuttle.
Mine turns
into a gun.
Mine
turns into a rock.
Fucking worst thing. The more useless than an actual.
That's right. Punchy wouldn't have had the GoBots. Punchy would have had Rock Lords.
No, God damn it! I told you we sold our food stamps to get Transformers money.
Wow. Yeah, I don't believe you. Those come on cards.
I found a real
actually Cornax
Walker.
Cornax.
Okay, Punchy. Let's hear you ruin my one-liner with your actual explanation of actual facts.
Yes, because I feel I have to, okay? And that is, they don't do
it. I know. The snap card is a recent development. You didn't have a snap card back in the 80s.
Exactly, dick.
Okay. I know. I get it.
Relax. Oh, I just got
relax!
I just got a notification. Apparently it is Mitch's birthday today. So happy birthday, Mitch.
Oh.
He's not going to listen to this.
No.
I don't care. I'm going to say it anyway. How about that?
Cornax pointed that out on our secret show last night, that Mitch does not listen to this show. And Mitch goes, nope. here's Tux.
I didn't expect him to answer any other way.
No, I know. I put a picture of Tux, the original Tux packaging.
Even if Mitch does listen to a show, if you tell him he doesn't listen to a show, he's still going to say nope. That's just how Mitch is. But clearly he doesn't listen to Nerd Hour.
It's not Tux's packaging.
Well, it's
that's a fan art piece.
Oh, it's a fan art piece. I'm sorry. It's pretty good then.
Yeah, it is.
Because it does look like it should be part of an original packaging.
Well, it was. It's a fan art based on the Transformers animated line, where they actually had a reference to Tux in I'm not going to go into it. I read TF Wiki too much.
Yeah,
that I can memorize all this shit.
Rogun was a GoBot.
Oh, yeah. I actually saw that on eBay recently.
GoBots. Holy shit.
Rogun. It's a robot that turns into a gun. But not like a Megatron-type gun. It's a space gun. By which I mean, it's a gun that looks very much like a robot bending over to accept receptacles in its bottom.
Yes, so, this was Tonka's answer to solving two.
No, because these actually came out the year before Transformers.
Right. Oh, well, then, okay. So they were trying to do something about Matchbox or Hot Wheels, right?
There was talks of the creation of Transformers for a while. So it's kind of a mixed thing. It's kind of like the idea of Transformers existed where Hasbro was going to bring over Takara's toys. But before they could do that, Bandai and Tonka heard the same thing and used the same idea, and they came out with it first. But the idea for Transformers came first, though Transformers came a year afterwards.
Because they put 1 year worth of development into Transformers instead of just making shit toys.
Yeah, exactly. actually, the toys came out in Japan first. And when I said the GoBots are still technically going on, they are, but not in this method. The original series was called Machine Robo in Japan, and that series has gone on and has actually evolved and has offshoots like things called Mugenbine, which are basically robots that curl up into cubes, and then you can attach a bunch of things and do a bunch of shit with them. I know way too much of shit.
All I want to do is post fan art of Tux now. Look at this great picture I found.
Oh, yeah, that's from Lil Formers. It's a webcomic about Transformers in that sort of art style.
It looks like a baby anime, and then like...
I know, that's how the series got popular.
Yeah, it's great.
Although, the eyes are the wrong color.
I got sucked into his toy talk again.
Punchy. Yep, you did.
Yeah, you got really sucked in there.
See, I will start him off, and then he'll just go. I slowly send him off the deep end.
So, hey, you know what, though? We were running low on prep and that ate up time, so I don't care. It's all good. And we cover more ground. So,
plus, it's nerd talk. Hello.
Exactly. It's on topic, motherfuckers. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So aren't you glad that I am such a pathetic nerd?
Oh, relax. You're a perfect fit on this show. Don't be mad.
Exactly. I'm a pathetic nerd.
Kiefer Sutherland is going to be part of the next Mortal Kombat game, apparently.
Okay. He's probably going to be voicing someone.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Or doing mocap, or both.
Now, there's not really much as far as what he's going to be doing.
I'm calling he's either going to be doing Striker or Johnny Cage.
I'm thinking voice work, definitely. I think he's more of a Striker. The best like Hollywood voice actor for Johnny Cage would be Kurt Russell.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
But basically, Keith Sutherland said, I did Mortal Kombat, and that's such a huge game. But it's so not like Metal Gear Solid 5. Because he was talking about playing Big Boss in Metal Gear Solid 5, the Phantom Pain. And, yeah, so now there's going to be people going apeshit knowing that Jack Bauer is in the next Mortal Kombat game, which...
Which is why I said Striker, because Jack Bauer, Striker, yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
I wonder what they're going to do with that game, though, because if they're following the continuity of the last game, pretty much everyone was killed.
Not really.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dude, did you play the last game?
No, I haven't gotten a chance to.
All right, in the story mode... Which was ridiculous, but fun. Like, it was so much fun. And, like, basically, instead of the... Like, they have the typical arcade version where you just kind of have a tower of fighters you got to fight past. And then you get to a boss battle and get the ending. But story mode, actually, like, you would take turns playing as different fighters. And it would progress the actual story itself.
Wait. I just read up about the ending. And, yeah, wait a minute. They're basically foreshadowing a remake of Mortal Kombat 4.
Yeah, but the only ones who survived the game...
Johnny Cage, Sonya Blade, Raiden, Quan Chi, Shinnok.
That's it. Everyone else dies.
You know what? I kind of like that. And it's kind of interesting.
It is kind of like... And
because that's pretty much what happened at the end of Armageddon, canonically... And then they restarted the universe, and then this happens. And then because they tried to prevent all the bad shit from happening, they instead made something go worse.
Here's what happened. I'll explain.
Technically, isn't Cyber Sub-Zero still around?
No, he was technically killed also. Here's what happened. It starts at the end of Armageddon.
I know.
Just as Raiden's about to be killed by Shao Kahn, he sends a message.
Say this?
Huh?
Didn't I just say this?
I know, but I'm explaining it.
And, so you're reiterating what I just said 5 seconds ago.
Just relax and go with it. And you call me the fourth wall destroyer. But anyway, he sends a message.
What the fourth wall if it just happened on the show?
Anyway, he sends a
it just happened 5 seconds ago on the air.
The best part
is fourth wall, stand that wall back up, Punchy.
The best part is he sends a message he must win to his past self. And his past self doesn't realize what the fuck he's talking about. Like, first he thinks it means Liu Kang, and things are going as they are. And then he's like, oh, maybe it's not Liu Kang. Maybe it's got to be Kung Lao. So he has Kung Lao be the main guy against Shao Kahn in the second one, and Shao Kahn kills Kung Lao.
Or maybe it was Johnny Cage.
No. The whole thing was, when he meant he must win, meant Shao Kahn must merge the realms against the rules of Mortal Kombat. And thus, the Elder Gods would punish him for it. That's what ended up having to do. But again, pretty much everyone, but at that point, everyone except for Johnny Cage and Sonya on the good guy side and most of the bad guy side were all killed to get to that.
Which could mean that we'll have some weird revival or new characters.
Probably mostly new characters, but granted, no one ever really stays dead in Mortal Kombat.
Well, duh.
But like the sequence where like pretty much everyone dies is fantastic. But like it was also cool that like there were some of the subtle differences, and it shows how Jax loses his arms and thus has to do the cybernetic arms in the story mode. Cool that they kind of don't rescue Sub-Zero. And he becomes a robot, and then Smoke becomes the guy who pretty much unmasks.
I don't know anything about this to comment, so I'm just a-hawing over here.
Ah. And the cool, like, because, and they tie in a lot of the stuff from the other games, like how the original Sub-Zero becomes Noob Saibot. Cornax.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like how Raiden has Raiden like has a vision showing Sub-Zero being killed by Scorpion and becoming Noob Saibot, and he tries to talk Scorpion out of it. He's like, "Listen, I'll help you bring your clan and your family back. Just don't kill him." But then Quan Chi fucks with Scorpion and shows him Sub-Zero's clan killing his family, which you know, if you look back, it was actually Quan Chi posing as him.
Yeah.
So, again, I like the fact that they put a lot of stuff into this one, like as far as a lot of references to the old series. And you know how Johnny Cage, like starting with the third one, was killed numerous times and brought back?
Yeah.
They actually mention this in the game because Raiden has a vision and you see in the background Johnny Cage is fighting Motaro. And Raiden actually kills Motaro before he can kill Johnny Cage, like in the original storyline. So, like, a little subtle hints like that are fantastic. And the gameplay is great. I kind of like how they did the 2D, 3D gameplay.
Yeah. Plus, it meant you didn't have to, when you clicked up, you jump. You don't have to worry about strafing to the side.
Yeah. For those who don't know what I'm talking about or didn't get what Cornax just said, basically it was a 2D side-scroller with 3D graphics.
Yeah.
Like a better version of Killer
2.5D.
Instinct. Yep. Better version of Killer Instinct.
Much oh my Jesus. Red Sox has gone insane.
Is he just posting all GoBots?
Yes. By the way, when are we going to finally do movie night again?
Basically,
the only reason I go that way is because I actually, before I even got this guy, like 2 months ago, I said to Punchy and Ariel, I just found the entire movie of the GoBots spinoff, Battle of the Rock Lords. We should totally riff on this.
Maybe one day, maybe we'll have Scrams in on it.
Oh, jeez.
Does that mean we've given up on a certain somebody else?
No, we have not given up on certain somebody else, but...
Okay, I'm just saying, well, no, because you said that we wouldn't do the movie until they joined, and they have not joined.
Oh, good point. Good point.
That's the one. I'm not trying to make it awkward. I do appreciate Scrambler. I'm just also wondering, is Scrambler the replacement for said person?
No, no. And Scrambler's more than welcome to come on anytime he wants.
Okay, so there's a potential to have 5 Nerd Hour hosts.
Whoa. Do I have to be a host here?
Yes. Otherwise, we'll throw you off the call right now.
Hey, remember, actually, he's the one
broadcasting.
He's broadcasting. He's one of the reasons my computer's not blue screening, which I want to apologize to the listeners last week.
Oh, geez. Yep.
Shut up. I hope.
Yep. Here we go, Dad.
Shut up.
Red rum.
Cornex.
Riley Cthulhu Fatong.
I will roll up a newspaper and smack you in the nose with it.
Snout.
Snout. I want to apologize to the listeners last
week. And I will cut you open like a
child. Oh, no. Okay.
And dive into your innards for warmth.
Relax, cornaxable lector.
So creepy.
Jeez, you cannot make those sound any more forced, can you?
That was the point. But anyway, I would like to apologize for last week's listeners. With my computer blue screening pretty much at will at one point, I couldn't even have much running.
You're not fat anymore. I can't make a running joke.
Ha ha.
Fuck you. Why couldn't you be fat?
Because I want to live a little longer. I got a lot to do. Maybe.
Since when?
About 3 minutes ago.
Oh, God damn it. Red Sox.
You said he's a Scrambler guy?
It's the comment beforehand because I avoided mentioning the name.
Well, listen, you're surprised that Troll Sox 86. the guy who got himself banned from Tua. That's my pronunciation of their abbreviation.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I got it.
He's not banned from the Red Show, especially the Red Show secret shows, which had the best chat of all time last night.
Red Sox is also never
by
banned.
By the way, Rage Against the Machine still sucks.
Oh, Punchy, Rage Against the Machine, good or bad?
They're hit or miss with me.
Yeah. Cornax, if you listen to the end of the show, Jenny K came on and gave him a go-ahead vote, so they are... in the lead. Punchy had the ability.
They are mediocre at best.
Someone said they were the best.
Like, I'll put it this way. Like, I like some of their songs, and I can see why they're considered influential to a lot of people.
Whoa. I can see how they can get popular. I don't see how they're an influence to anyone.
I mean, come on. Let's not pretend. But anyway.
No, I'm not pretending. I don't see how they're influential. Unless, you know, you're talking about other people saying, hey, I'm going to get political. I don't see them being influential as musicians. Hey.
There are a lot of bands that have a one sound or one song sound. Rage Against the Machine, to some people, Cornax, Mitch, and Footer all sound the same.
Look, I'm not going to say all of their songs sound absolutely the same. Like, you can see differences, okay? But when it sounds close enough that it pretty much just sounds like you've rearranged parts of other songs, it's like a Taco Bell menu. That's their discography. And it's the same list of ingredients.
Okay, and you're
just mixed together in a different way.
And you're pretending that people now don't get influenced by stuff like that. With the just plethora of small attention spans going around now. You're forgetting that, though, Cornax. It is possible. They would not have been all that influential 30 years ago, but now I would consider them influential.
How is it you only talk about them being influential once I mention Taco Bell? Did fast food jog your memory? Do you miss fast food?
I'm not letting you play that off. You mentioned influential before Taco Bell.
Ha ha.
Yeah, but it took him a while, didn't it?
Oh. I'm just
like
throwing
in my mind. I had already moved on, and it's like influential. I'm like, what?
I'm throwing away some of the pictures from when I grab pictures and toss them into WhatsApp or onto Twitter. And I'm throwing away right now a picture of Eeyore that I posted in regards to Hammy just being a negative Nancy sometimes.
Oh, sometimes, God. When is he not?
Oh, bother.
Well, again, though, with Rage Against the Machine, like, you got to remember what I like to listen to. And like,
shit?
I like to listen to good music, goddammit.
You just called Rage Against the Machine more worthwhile than bad.
You said you listened to Megadeth.
What's wrong with Megadeth, bitch?
Yeah, I'm not a Megadeth fan either.
Here's the thing, like I said,
I also like Dio, Black Sabbath. Do I what? Aerosmith, AC/DC, Motorhead.
Music that came out after you were born.
Music that came out after I was born.
Probably not.
I like Kendrick Lamar.
Actually, I really like Kendrick Lamar. That album, Mad City, was really good.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
You know who is better with the heavy music with rapping stuff than...
if you say Limp Bizkit, I'm going to kill you.
No, I'm not going to... Who do you think I am, Footer?
Look, like I say, I don't have any problem with Limp Bizkit or Fred Durst, but I'm just the way you're building it up, I'm like, don't you dare...
Listen, I'm not the one whose hopes of getting another payday are hinging on Fred Durst. I'm not going to say Limp Bizkit.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, Footer.
Wow, taking shots.
That's
there.
Not a shot, Footer. Footer's talented. How the fuck
is this a Nerd Hour versus Red Show thing?
No, listen. All right. Listen, and I want to point this out. How the fuck is Footer not like more well? How is he on MLR with that voice?
He is so
because
good.
He sounds like Mersh, and that's a question of like, why? How is Mersh on MLR?
His singing voice.
Oh.
Like he's got a really good singing voice. Like I'm not
drug
like
problems. Drug problems.
Oh please, come on. Drug problems
in
the music
I'm
industry.
I'm taking a shot in the dark, motherfucker.
No, if that would be why he is on it. He fits in. If like, that were the case,
exactly.
Like a guy with that good of vocal talent should be too good to be on MLR.
I have an answer. Bands after I was born, Mastodon.
Yeah, there you go.
Punchy, did you hear Footer's rough cover of Ain't No Sunshine?
Not yet.
It's pretty good.
But I will now check it out sometime after the show.
Yeah, it's in the WhatsApp.
And again, he does a lot of like the adrenaline rock type stuff, like what I've heard so far of the stuff he's done. And while that's not my thing, like, I like it. Like, when I first heard it, even before I knew him and heard the songs, he's got a really good singing voice.
He does. Yeah. And I he was asking for a program that I was unable to find for him free of cost. So I paid for it for him and gave it to him as a gift. And now, so I asked him to do it because he's looking for covers to do so he can get to learn the presets. So I asked him to do Ain't No Sunshine by Bill Withers, and he's been doing a lot of covers lately, kind of just because then he doesn't have to come up with music. He can just lay down vocals and just kind of get to know the way the program works. Nice. And it's really good. And he played The Kill last night live on the show, on The Secret Show, acoustic. I mean, it's one of his go-to acoustic covers, but still. To play on air for more than just, you know, P-Rock, Texie, and I is putting yourself out there, you know.
Yes. And, like, again, though, like, I listen to some of his songs, and I'm like, all right, I can name at least five people who've gotten famous in radio rock that have worse voices than Footer. At least five. And there, you know, some of the bands that I can name the vocalist of, I like the bands. Others, I can't stand the band. Like, for example, he's definitely got a better voice than Goofy Josh Todd. Can we stop pretending that Buck Cherry's good?
I like a few Buck Cherry songs.
I do, too. I will admit, though, some of their songs do sound the same as well, but I find them more entertaining, I guess, than Rage Against the Machine.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's definitely better than the clean vocalist of Atreyu.
Yeah.
You don't like Atreyu?
Although, you know, Atreyu gets points by being named after an never-ending story character.
Oh, yeah. That's true. But
although, again, I was just thinking about Footer's music, and when I was still on the air at my old station, like, one thing I did almost religiously was play a song from the Pace Car EP from Monday Night Indian. I just looked up the album on Amazon, and I'm pretty sure I know all four of these people who are viewed.
Oh, shit.
Well, let's see. Obviously, there's Finley Manhattan. Hi, Finsta. There's Kells. There's Steve, who I'm almost sure is Foams or someone. No. Oh,
or
yeah,
Canadian Steve.
Probably.
Yeah. Canadian Steve is Tundra.
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, and I want to point out that I'm getting Red Show shirts in the mail.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know the other one, but apparently it's an informed buyer that just says, check it out. This EP rocks, crunchy and excellent to drive to. Surprisingly unique in today's overproduced music scene.
Is this – what song – what is this?
The Pace Car EP. Monday Night Indian.
Oh, okay. Well, because Footer does a song called Pace Car. And I
know. That's his band.
I know.
Holy shit. You do a show with him.
I'm just teasing. I'm just teasing.
Pace Car EP is where the song comes from.
I'm just teasing you.
Yeah, he did say that, Cornex, before you get a coronary. dude, all right. So what originally led to this, I was going to say, what bands do like the rap and heavy music thing better? I can at least name two. E-Town Concrete is one of them. Much better at it than Rage Against the Machine and Limp Bizkit. And...
What? I'm sorry. I'm laughing as I read because I realize who some of these people are that reviewed. They're still though just fucking lying out of their teeth.
Yes. Anyway.
I don't mean with the good reviews, but when they're saying was an amazing find for me.
They
didn't find it. Footer basically advertised it to you.
Well, hey, listen. They've got dedicated fans. That's pretty awesome. But still, yeah. A good find, yeah. You guys had that played for you. Well, then again, I get why like they're trying to make it sound like they're just casual people and not friends of the person who did it.
Well, no. But,
God damn it!
If you follow Footer on Twitter, which you should at FooterK.
All right, you know what?
You're going to see interaction between him and Kells. So when you see Kells Mad 76, Monday Night Indian was an amazing find for me. No, it wasn't.
I do want to point out, though, that this conversation is a little frustrating because when there's someone who's talented, who's less famous than people who are not talented, that are getting mainstream success now, it's annoying no matter what field it is. Like, when I see that Michael Bay is making millions upon millions of dollars, and there's people who haven't even broken big yet in the...
Are you including yourself in that listing?
No, because I've got to make something first. Why?
Good boy. Good boy.
Why? What were you going to take another dig?
I'm not
delusional enough to say that I should be
no,
on...
No, I was saying good boy because you're not delusional.
Yeah,
That's the point.
I'm not so delusional that I'll put myself on that list before I've even made anything.
Okay, which is a good thing.
I can't wait.
I was complimenting you on that.
All right, well, still. When I go to that school, though, I will be making, like, at least 8 films, short and possibly feature length. So there's that. So I'll finally have something to my credit and some experience there. But, yeah, no, there's directors who are still making indie movies who are much better than some of the, like, big-budget directors like Michael Bay.
Well, I think the thing is a lot of the indie guys prefer to stay in the indies because they can do what they want and not have to worry about, I have to do this because someone might not like this or someone, Michael Bay is fine with just, hey, I'm going to have some fun and I'm going to make some money. Other people want to make a statement, and they can't exactly do that a lot of times with big budgets.
Well, you know what? You know what he cannot do is cast Megan Fox as April O'Neil.
Oh, Poodle. Are you mad?
That's the worst casting choice in like worse than half of the Batman Superman casting.
I'm going to go ahead and say not quite. Okay, actually maybe.
Come on,
as much as I give them shit for as much as we all give them shit for the casting choices on that movie, they are at least some pretty legitimate actors.
They're legitimate actors. They're bad fits, but they're
legitimate. Bad fits, but they're good actors.
What I can't wait for. Oh, you know what else?
Not hammy.
Yeah, come on. I don't hate everything like
everything.
No, I'm not.
It's not hammy.
Yeah, come on. I don't hate everything like hammy.
No, I said annoyed, not hate.
I don't get annoyed at everything like hammy. I forgot. Hating everything is Dennis. But
No. Sometimes he thinks things are okay.
He thinks things are aight. That's how he describe them. But so I
mean, unless it's Tool, in which case you better not say, you know, Tool is a little overrated, or else you're just Satan.
Yeah. So I recently, like a month or two ago, because I wasn't sure when it was going to be re-released on Blu-ray, I ordered a copy of The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, Criterion.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, like a week ago, they finally announced that they are releasing it on Blu-ray. Motherfuckers. If I knew this was happening, I would have not bought the movie on DVD. I would have just waited for the Blu-ray in May.
Well,
you can sell it, can't you?
Oh, yeah. I'll sell it. I'll sell it for like 2 cents at FYE or something. Hey, blue is the warmest color.
You can find an FYE. FYE was like one of my favorite stores, and then it shut down in my area.
You know,
I need to find a new one.
Yeah, you know what's gonna be awesome? Blue is the warmest color comes out on home media this week.
Oh Jesus fucking Christ!
Yeah,
Pornax hates lesbians.
No, but here's the thing: things become less sexy when Punchy is describing them.
Well,
that's
how about
not, that's not true? Lesbians? Well, I don't. Okay.
Okay. Okay, imagine someone telling you about two girls, you know, eating each other's asses out. Now imagine it's Punchy specifically telling you that, and imagine it's in his excited voice where you can hear the smile on his face, and his eyes are wide, and you just know it.
I don't think I sounded that excited. Relax. First off,
it was his birthday present to himself.
You still didn't answer me. Think about it. Think about it.
Punchy, it is 2 o'clock. They don't cut this, do they?
I don't think they do.
Okay.
Yeah, we're having our fun here.
Fuck it, we can still have fun.
Yeah, we're having our fun here.
Fuck it, we'll JJ it.
Just trying to do my show, guys. Just trying to do my show, guys.
Red Sox would like you to describe something sexy for him.
No, I'm not going to describe something sexy. Yarr. Here's a picture.
That was the time.
Hey, Cordax, here's a picture from the movie.
Okay.
Yeah, I see.
Better than any description you've given.
Oh, my gosh. What was I going to say about the movie? But, you know, there was that movie. The Fantastic Mr. Fox, they finally released that. I can't wait to get that. Right, guys? Fantastic Mr. Fox.
West yeah, Anderson. No, I it's my favorite stop animation film. I actually really enjoy that film. I just had to throw it into a category where it's the only film in there. So,
yeah,
I really like that movie.
With stop animation, which reminds me of like 80s filmmaking, how they would just have like the stop motion stuff, like, and sometimes in a live action movie, it would throw you off, like the end of The Thing.
Or RoboCop?
Yeah, but with RoboCop, I mean, it's RoboCop. RoboCop can do no wrong.
I know. By you.
Listen, by everybody.
And I saw Eeyore say something. He was shitting on RoboCop, by the way. New RoboCop.
Oh, well, yeah. Hammy shits on everything, though. And then he tries to act like he's like being a neutral presence.
So yeah, I have to see. I don't know. I gotta check out the new RoboCop.
But like I said, though, like I don't know. It was weird. I like to make fun of him because he only watched the movie a year ago. Literally a year ago.
So?
And I don't know. Maybe it's different when you're like growing up watching the movie and you've seen the sequels. The horrendous sequels, by the way. Like, 2 was all right, but it was still bad compared to the original one.
I'll say this. As a kid growing up, as bad as the sequels were, they gave you some awesome toys.
Yeah, they did. I'll give them that.
As movies, they were shit, but they were great for toys. Like, in, Nice.
You want to know a movie that was really good, that was shit for toys?
For anyone who doesn't know, I'm distracted because Red Sox posted a GIF of a lesbian three-way makeout between two blondes who could be twins. Probably not, no.
Two blondes and a brunette. Sounds like a walks in the bar joke. Yes, it does.
Well, no, it's because the best joke I have about that is a blonde, a brunette, and a redhead all walk into a bar.
I skinned their organs. That's your punch.
And I made a coat out of them.
Sleep with one eye open, bitches. I'm going to fuck your ear.
Relax.
See, it's the ear fucking that I have a problem with. It's not the. It's not the.
I
the
know. And
great movie with bad toys, Jurassic Park.
Oh, dude. Well, some of the toys were all right, but like, it's an example of the toys like being.
They weren't extreme dinosaurs.
God.
Ew. Speaking of merchandising for movies, see, I can do segues. Nike announced they're going to be re-releasing the Nike Air 2015 as seen on Back to the Future Part 2.
Well, I was going to say that ever. You could have just transferred that into segue for Toy Fair 2014 the Transformers Age of Extinction figures that were coming out for movie purposes. Jesus.
Well, I wanted to talk about the Nikes for Back to the Future Part 2.
Speaking of Nikes, I believe Hasbro and no, it was mostly Takara, co-branded with Nike to make a Calvin Johnson Megatron figure.
What?
Yeah, I saw that.
It's basically the current Megatron figure, Generations line, based on the IDW Comics appearance, for its appearance for a little while. But what they've done is they've colored it to resemble Calvin Johnson's new sneaker. So it's kind of purple.
Huh. I think Nike said they're going to try to make the self-tying, self-adjusting shoe, like in the movie. Could you imagine if they were able to pull that shit off?
I want the self-drying.
Well, it means that no one would bitch at them for the whole, where's my such and such? And the only people getting bitched at would be everyone who isn't making a hoverboard.
Okay, where am I going to get a hoverboard? Relax.
It's just Mattel.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shit, man.
If they wouldn't have put
Mattel. I kind of regret not getting this Megatron. It comes with a fucking football. And, like, I mean, a legit football for the figure.
That is actually pretty awesome.
Right, dude.
Now, Red Sox is putting lesbian gifts in the chat.
He's really taking privilege with Dennis not being here.
He said he's on a lesbian kick right now. You're welcome.
I don't know if he's had liquor or not. He's starting to act like butt monkey.
I don't think he can have
liquor. In a favorable way.
No, he's not putting shit pictures. So he's definitely...
I said in a favorable way.
Hey, listen, I was loading up. Well, in a favorable way, it doesn't describe the shit pictures usually posted. What?
No, that's...
What?
We had lots of shit gifts in chat last night.
Well, yes, we did.
I'm going down.
Fucking dead.
I'm yelling timber.
I can't stand that song.
Monkey is an ornery motherfucker.
But he's fantastic. He's fantastic drunk.
Christ, he's an asshole.
Dark Fox actually has Butt Monkey sounders on the soundboard now.
Hey, that came out before you were born, so we can't add that to the after you were born list.
Oh, I don't fucking like that song.
Yeah, well, you were just singing, doing what to the tone of it. So,
and that would, okay, you know what? Because it's recognizable, and also Vol-fucking-tare.
All right.
Well, Voltaire.
Regardless, I'm gonna mention a few things.
Kill Switch Engage. Five Finger Death Punch.
All right, enough of the music. I'm going to do the last topic for us.
Boo.
I'm gonna poll you guys.
Boo.
I'm here, Punchy. All
right. I'm going to poll you guys on something, and it's going to be more like a
Don't
poll.
Don't crash into it.
Well, hey, listen, it's a poll, so it's not going to be a long-winded, poorly written rant on a Facebook post.
I know, but you might still crash into it.
No, I don't crash into polls except for once.
Yes, you do. Yes, you
once.
Fucking do.
Once. Oh, okay, you flipped out once. You have an anger problem. You're not like...
Hey. You know what? That's the same thing the guy who fucked the goat said. It was only once!
Yeah, but for me, it was legitimately only once.
Uh-huh.
The guy who fucked the goat, if he's like... got the technique down, he's clearly been down that path a few times. But anyway, I'm going to ask you guys something here. There's three things I'm going to point out as far as technology or just media is concerned. I'm going to ask you guys which one is the biggest sign of what's going to be the future, or kind of like the biggest game changer. There's the Sony virtual reality headset for the PlayStation 4. There's the WWE Network, and then there's the flexible cell phones.
Flexible cell phone.
You know, jeez, fuck you, Scrambler. Fuck you, I'm in the fucking chat. Fuck you.
Which one?
All of fuck you!
The only one that's the little Chinese boy that we talked about yesterday, that's a great one. The one with the horse is Red Sox, and then... The young child having the heart attack. It's fantastic.
Punchy, I would say virtual. You know what? It depends on how good the virtual reality is. Because there's been a lot of shit that's claimed to be virtual reality in the past. And if Sony can actually pull off true virtual reality, then that is a sign of the future.
Remember Virtual Boy? All right.
If not, then I say... it would be WWE Network, but it isn't really a sign of the future, but it's a sign of business and industry moving forward and getting smarter.
Yes. Kind of like I agree with the WWE Network part because virtual reality might take a little bit, and who knows if bendable cell phones is going to be a niche. I don't think it'll become an everyday thing.
I don't think it needs to be like roll it up and pick your teeth with it, but I think – having a little bit of give to it, a semi-rigid, is what's really going to be a big deal. WWE Network, fine, but the virtual reality thing, have we not gotten over the want for virtual reality yet?
No, because I want to stomp on Goombas, and I want to see their little mushroom guts spew out.
This is what I imagine... Cornax look at being like is he has that shitty virtual reality where you're in the ring where you're standing in the little thing on the little platform like in Hackers where Fisher Stevens is like running into the edge punching at nothingness. That's what you want to be like, because I've tried those things, because we're a little older than you, but when they tried to make virtual reality when we were like 10 years old and you tried doing it, it was just so shitty. I think I don't even give a shit about it being viable. I don't care.
Hey, Virtual Boy, am I right?
Virtual Boy was horrendous.
All I'm saying is if they make virtual reality where it feels like you're actually in the game. And maybe they can't make it like an actual game, but or maybe just make it into, well, you assume a digital avatar and people see you as the avatar, but you experience things as yourself. I don't know. Something like that, maybe. Maybe like a Second Life or something where you are actually in it is the best way I can describe it. If they can do something like that, that's impressive.
All right, fine. If you polled, I want to poll now. What would be the better virtual reality experience? The movie Surrogate, the movie Gamer, or Avatar? Which one of those would you rather it be like?
Yeah.
I have not watched any of those movies.
Shut your mouth. You haven't seen any of those?
Nope.
Watch Gamer. You'll like Gamer.
I think Gamer.
I think Gamer, too.
Just as long as we don't see Michael C. Hall doing like a fucking West Side Story dance number again.
Going down the aisle, crazy. No, I'm doing a Robin Williams bit. I should shut up.
You didn't like Dexter doing the Broadway dance?
Well, it was all right, but it was weird.
I like Terry Crews in that, but the experience of how to control the virtual or the avatar type thing, I think that's the better one because, wow, it's perfect. Because the way that it is in Avatar and Surrogate is like you basically go into like a rendering machine where it takes over. You know, you get plugged in pretty much. It's like the Matrix, you know, and then that's how you control it. In Gamer, it's immersive like that, but you control it, but it's more of a you're watching through the eyes of a person instead of actually being that person while you're in there. I don't know. Cornax, you should watch Gamer. I think you'd enjoy it.
I think you would too.
Plus, Terry Crews is in it. You know, the Old Spice guy.
Terry Crews is backup Old Spice guy.
He's
their celebrity endorsement.
He's Hail
Old
Caesar.
Spice guy. Is Old Spice guy. Don't claim anyone else. He's Old Spice guy.
Well. With that. And also, apparently...
He does not have pubic hair. He just has a beard on his dick.
All right. Well, apparently, Scrambler is a fan of poles.
He does not have chest hair. He just has a beard on his pecs.
You have beards on your pecs. Anyway.
He does not have ass hair. He just has a beard on his asshole.
Okay. Anyway...
He does not have toe hair. He just has a beard on his feet.
And with that, we are the Nerd Hour. We will see you guys next week. You know, just figure I'll point that out because it is.
We do not have body hair. We just have beards everywhere. We're beards, beards, beards. We are the cousinate of beards.
You can follow us at Scrambler and Shy, at Cornax MLR, and at CM Punchy. Also follow at Nerd Hour Ariel. Also follow our new partner at Zenoscope, spelled Zenescope. And you know the interview subject. If you like the interview, follow at Anthony B. Spay, spelled SPAY.
And do it, or we will hit fuck your throat with a soldering iron. Good night.